We are quickly approaching the end of 2024. And if you have not purchased an investment property yet this year, and it's been one of your goals, I need you to listen very closely. I know many of you live in areas where it's so expensive and investment properties seem impossible. I'm talking about some of the big cities. So LA, New York City, maybe even Seattle, Atlanta, places in Florida, and the list goes on. If you know that where you live is too expensive, I need you to lock in right now. Investing out of state changed my life as somebody living in California. I now invest in Ohio and I'm growing my portfolio. It's something that's possible. You just need the right information and execution. So if that's you, if you want to learn how to invest out of state, go to outofstatemoney.com and there is a free training that'll outline the steps for you and help you understand exactly what it takes. So go to outofstatemoney.com or simply go to the link in the description of this episode. The reality for many of you is that investment properties where you live have become absolutely unaffordable. The good news is that there are many cities with affordable properties and many of those under 100K. If you're someone who's ready to buy your first out-of-state property in the next 4 months, then I encourage you to check out my free training that'll break down the process and show you exactly what it takes to invest out of state. I purchased properties out of state and it's changed my life. The same is possible for you. You simply need the right information. My free training will help you take that next step towards buying your first out-of-state property. You can watch the training right now at outofstatemoney.com, or you can click the link in the description of this episode. Again, you can find it at outofstatemoney.com, or you can click the link in the description of this episode.
Excuse me, may I talk to you for a second?
Yes. This is the Black Real Estate Dialogue, and the purpose of the Black Real Estate Dialogue is to document the journey of an up-and-coming real estate investor and to share the stories of successful Black real estate investors.
So I have another question. So can a community shut down development? So like, let's say you're at one of these meetings, right?
Yeah.
Everybody is against the development. Nobody wants this building or this structure to go up. Is it ever possible for the community pushback to cancel all the plans?
Most definitely. Thankfully, I haven't worked on a project where that's happened to any of my clients, but I've seen it many times before from the architectural side and seeing some projects get shut down. And it's definitely a fine line between projects getting shut down for the right reason and for the wrong reasons. A lot of times, unfortunately, you'll see projects. We live in LA. Housing is needed. There's no way around it. A lot of times, unfortunately, we'll see projects get shut down that's going to provide a lot of housing, for example, by NIMBYs, not in my backyard. People that just don't want a project because they think it'll bring a certain demographic, a certain income level to their perfect community, and they just don't want the project to happen. There's reasons and things that happen. The way those things happen is because their voices are loud. They put together a lot of organizing behind it. They put pressure on city council. They put pressure on a lot of the different political aspects. And at the end of the day, every project has to be approved by whatever jurisdiction it needs to be approved by. And I mean, a lot of it, for better or for worse, is a political game. If you get in the right ears and you're loud enough, they just don't want no beef. And so they're like, you know what, we're just not gonna let this project go through. That's a really basic way of putting it. There's a lot that goes into it, but that's a lot of the reasons why it happened. But there's another end of it where I think communities really do need to be empowered to be able to know that they do have a voice, so that a project just doesn't come in their neighborhood. Not necessarily in the sense that we just don't want it because we have no skin in the game in it, because not everyone is going to be able to own in a certain neighborhood. That's just the nature of it. Hopefully at some point that changes who the people are that are owning it. But at the very least, if your community isn't the one owning this building that's coming into this space, being able to be empowered to show up at these city council meetings, to show up at these community events and make your voice heard, that if you want this project to go through in a smooth way, you need to connect with us so we can try how to figure out the best way to make this worth both of our while. Like, we need to figure out a way that what you're bringing in can leverage and help and combat displacement, that can combat gentrification. Because when something new comes in, people are going to want to come there, and that's just the nature of it. But we need to do it in a way that everyone has a chance to be able to stay where they are or come in and do it in the right way. And so it's just a matter of really just being able to organize together and organize in the right way so that your voices are heard, but do it in a way that's not combative, but in a way that's, you're just making it known that to be here, you have to know that we're here, and you have to know that we want to work alongside out of you for the betterment of this entire neighborhood.
Definitely. So we've talked about, you know, what the community involvement can look like, which I think is great.
Mm-hmm.
And where I live, there's plenty of development going on. I have no idea how to find out about if there's a meeting, if there's an event. Like, how do people know that this stuff is going on? Because, you know, in cities all across America, there's development going on. And if I'm hearing this episode and I want to be involved now, I want to have a voice or a seat at the table, whatever you want to call it, how do I do that?
Yeah, no, that's a very, very, very great question. Part of it, one, is keeping your eyes and ears open. Nowadays, I mean, the best way for anything is social media. I mean, social media, whether it be through reading the newspaper digitally, whether it be through Instagram, things like that, start to follow pages and start to follow different media that talks a lot about development. There's one out here owned by a good brother of ours, Matthew Gates, in the building LA. They do a great job at really being able to talk about a lot of the things that's happening in the South LA neighborhood. Urbanize LA is a good website to follow. Every day, I have my inbox flooded with things that come from them that just talks about different developments. So starting to see things through there, being connected with the local political realm of where you are, your council members, being connected. If you live in places that have HOAs, being connected with them as well. Most things that have happened don't go past them without hearing it. And so just figuring out those people that already have their ear to the ground. But all of the websites for the council district that you live in, things like that, you can sign up for their mailing list, and just kind of being aware about the potential things that might be popping up in your space. But even not really necessarily just your neighborhood, you could see something that's happening a couple neighborhoods away, and you can start to realize that it's getting closer to here now. We might need to start preparing for something that's going to be headed in our way soon. But those are a few ways that come top of mind for me.
Got it. So it sounds like, you know, getting involved and knowing what's happening politically, locally, and then also if there's publications or social media pages covering real estate news, development news, neighborhood news, like those are some places where it's a greater opportunity to find out about these meetings or different type of developments.
Yeah, most definitely.
Got you. Sounds good. So you mentioned NIMBY, not in my backyard. I don't want to gloss over that. So, you know, there is a housing crisis and shortage in a lot of cities across country, LA included, right?
Yeah.
But almost anyone who's watching this can probably relate if you live in a city.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of proposed developments are being shot down for a number of reasons, but many people don't want added density near where they live. So if I live in a neighborhood of only single family homes and there's a proposal to add, let's say, an 8-unit building at the corner,
mm-hmm,
where there's empty land, or as an example, it's like, no, I don't want all these people near me. I don't want all this stuff. So how do we respond to those who are saying not in my backyard? How do we progress and add more housing if that is the mentality of a lot of people?
Man, you asking the tough questions. Yeah, I love it. I love it. I mean, everything, again, I'll use this phrase a lot, for better or for worse, because there's always two sides to every story. But for better or for worse, that comes in the real estate development world, especially around housing. Of course, boils down to money, but a lot of times boil down to the politics of the area. Not touching too much on that side is just like, that's not my field, and that's nothing that I dive too much into expertise of. But really thinking about it, for California, for her example, cities have required numbers of housing that they have to hit in a certain year, whether it be affordable housing, restricted income, or just housing in general. A lot of times I feel like neighborhoods either don't realize that or don't care about that. And these buildings and this density is getting built, whether you like it or not. It's the matter of the developers that are doing it, if they're doing it in the right way, that is trying to just make sure that it's not just, like you said, and I get it. If you're in a single family neighborhood, you don't want a 10-story tower popping up at the corner. Beyond density, that's just like, it just doesn't look right. It just doesn't make sense for that neighborhood.
So that's Brooklyn.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Don't even get me started about Northeast real estate development, man. but yeah, I love it. I love it. But there's definitely a lot of interesting case studies we could talk about that. But specifically out here, it's interesting because, okay, so for example, I'm working on a project right now. Won't name no names or nothing, because I mean it's a little heated in what's going on with it. But I'm working on a project. It's a multifamily development. There's going to be some affordable, and it's in a space pretty similar to kind of the picture you're painting. That's near a single family residential neighborhood. It's not right in the middle of it, but it's close enough that the people that are living in the single family neighborhood absolutely don't want that project there. Heard in a city council meeting around that project, a few of the neighbors say some pretty disparaging things about the type of people that they think are going to be brought into the project because it's lower income than they're used to, and what those people will do to the neighborhood. You could read between the lines about who those people are and what they look like and all that. I doubt I have to paint that picture too much more.
We understand.
But that's the types of things you hear in these projects. But a lot of things, whether they don't realize or they don't care to realize, that city is required to hit a certain amount of added housing by a certain point, and this is one of the projects that's going to make a dent in it. If this project wasn't doing it, another project would be doing it. The project that I'm working on, we're doing it in a way where we're speaking with the community. We're trying to do our best to make sure that they understand what's going on from the legal sense, from the just need for housing, but also from the what can we do to make this work for you. You're not going to love it, we get it, because it's more people, but what can we get out of this? Like, what can we help you with? More park space, X, Y, and Z, help out with adding crosswalks or things like that on a street that has a lot of accidents. Like, what can we do? And a lot of times, unfortunately, that's the best that can be done in a city and in a space that we just need more housing.
Thank you for listening to another episode of the Black Real Estate Dialogue Podcast. Remember to follow us on Instagram at Black Real Estate Dialogue. And be sure to leave us 5 stars and a review on your favorite podcast listening platform. Until next time.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Fuel restrictions apply.